We are talking today with Sabrina Chapp. Sabrina Chapp is a playwright, spoken word artist, singer-songwriter, and editor, originally from the suburbs of Chicago. She is founder of the all-woman songwriter series Chicks That Kick and the editor of the zine Clitterature, 18 Interviews with Women Writers. Her CDs include Bedroom Sessions, Oompa, and We Are the Parade, and she is here to talk about her book, Live Through This, on creativity and self-destruction. Sabrina, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So start out, tell us, what was the motivation in putting together Live Through This?
You know, it's strange because I'm mostly a musician and like performer. I never really meant to put a book together. And sort of the long answer is that when I was performing in Ladyfest in San Francisco, I started like, there was a great performance and I was performing alongside all these amazing female artists and trans artists. And I was like, someone should document this. So then I did the zine. And the zine ended up, I thought it would take me a month. It took me a year. And it ended up being the size of a book. And I was just trying to get some rights from different publishers to reprint little sections of people's work in it. And one of the publishers was like, well, let's see it. And they immediately wanted to publish it. And all of a sudden, then I was talking to press people. And I was like, what? Books? Like, you know, I'm a performer. And then one press was like, well, we're not going to take this, but we like how you think. Do you have any other ideas for books? And at that point, I was like, oh, God damn it. I just want to do my music, you know? But I had a press asking me for a book idea. Like, I'm not going to not say something. So I said, well, yeah, I mean, you know, you always hear about women that artists that kill themselves, but you never hear about the ones that don't. And I would like to write a, you know, I have a book where people have considered suicide, but haven't done it. And so it initially was called For Smart Girls Who've Considered Suicide, off the Entosaki Shange poem play for colored girls who've considered suicide when the rainbow of color is not enough. And that basically, when it was shaped like that, it initially was a lot harder to talk about because anytime I mentioned the word suicide, anyone that I talked to had such a massive peacock reaction to it. Like their, you know, fan would go up and be like, what are you going to say about it? And I was just like, oh, okay, you know, it's a very tender thing for everyone, rightly so. So I wanted to include different forms of self-destruction, not just suicide, because cutting, alcoholism, bulimia, all of those things are things that I think I wanted to talk about that people don't talk about enough. So finally, I sort of grouped it all under self-destruction, which there's actually not a lot of books that group all of those things. If you go to, you know, Barnes & Noble or whatever, you'll get like, here's the cutter section and here's the book on alcoholism and here's the book on, but those are just different ways of self-destruction. And, you know, it's like all the, at the cafeteria, the bulimics won't talk to the alcoholics and all, you know, but basically we're all dealing with this form of taking away our own power. So I wanted to sort of have that medium understood and bring them all under self-destruction as a whole and also focus on a positive thing through it. Live through this on creativity and self-destruction. What does it take? What is that balance of creating yourself through destruction? So that was sort of like the sort of actual physical reason the book and how it came to. But for the most part, when I was in college, I was dealing with a lot of this stuff myself. And like most people that are in college and that are discovering themselves, I had no idea that anyone had dealt with this beforehand. And all of my heroes had killed themselves. At the time, I was really taking myself a bit seriously as a playwright. And Sarah Kane was this amazing British playwright, 27 years old, incredible. And she was the first playwright that was female that I felt an identity with, that was doing some really powerful, raw work. And then she ended up killing herself at 27, and she was my hope. You know, she was my Kurt Cobain, you know, and I was like, that's what I'm going to be like. And as soon as she killed herself, I really had to stop and think and be like, well, if creating is going to make me kill myself, do I want to burn out fast and die? Like, I'm like, I can be brilliant, but if I continue down this self-destructive path, basically I'm not going to make it long. Or am I going to just stop creating art? And I actually did for a while because I was so nervous about just going crazy. So, you know, at that time, I didn't have anyone to talk to about these things. I was terrified of it, and I sort of hid it for about 10 years. I didn't really talk to people about it. I got better. I got a control over myself, and when the book idea came, I started talking about these things, and all of my friends were like, why are you talking about self-destruction? Because they didn't know. And I realized that even myself, I'd shamed myself so much that I'd not ever continued the dialogue. And I sort of wanted to create a book that basically was a cast of the most amazing artists, renegade artists, saying, I dealt with this, but I lived through it, to sort of give people that feel like they're alone sort of this group, this rock star group that is like, you can make it. You can make it. This is normal. This will happen. Because all of the stories that we mostly hear about this end in suicide, end in depression. That's when we hear it in the news. You never hear, like, I went through something hellish, but then I came through it. That's not honestly glorified. And for the most part, also, people don't talk about self-destruction in a real way. What they do is they're always like, I had a problem with bulimia. Like, Halle Berry had an eating disorder, but then she got better. You know, that's how it's covered. It's not actually talking about how seductive self-destruction is and how powerful you can feel when you're doing that and how it twins with creating things. So this entire book is a exploration both of the self-destructive behaviors, but artists that deal with it in their own creative capabilities. So that's the super long answer. Sorry.
So do you feel like when one is participating in self-destruction, in a way they're actually taking control that they don't have normally or don't feel normally?
Yeah, I do. It's really interesting. Control and shame are big, especially in Nicole Blackman's essay. Nicole Blackman's awesome. She's so great. Great spoken word artist. She used to actually recorded with like Cam FDM and the Golden Palominos and all these people. And she wrote this poem called Holy from the viewpoint of an anorexic. And it just talks about the control, like, so severely about, and that's one thing people don't understand, is that, like, when you're anorexic, there is such a sense of control. You have to control every single bite. You have to, you know, I'm sorry, I'm a little tired, so it's hard to talk about this stuff, but I started realizing that, and I've never really gone super on the record talking about this stuff, but people that don't feel they have a sense of control of anything in their life, especially young women who feel like constantly this environment is for boys. Like, you know, this is not my space. All I have is myself. That is all I can actually own because I don't want to hurt anything else. You know what? I'm going to take control of myself. I'm going to do this to myself because they can't touch this. You know, I might not own the world. I might not own my bedroom. I might, you know, not have a place that is mine, but my body is mine. So that I am going to dictate what happens to. And there is a sense of power in that. And Nicole talks about this very well in her poem and talks about control and shame and how that plays with self-destruction. But for the most part, a lot of times, and this is the point that a lot of young women don't understand, or young trans people, anyone going through these things, people come to self-destruction because there's a part of themselves they don't like and they want to alter it in some way, you know, and it is a powerful thing. And that's why it's exciting. A lot of times it's the first time they've taken control over their own bodies. They're like, I'm going to do this. I don't want this, you know, so but it's when you continue that cycle of self-destruction without leaving room for creation that it can get dangerous. You know, Kate Bornstein talks about this in her essay a lot, and also in her book, Hello, Cruel World, 101 Alternatives to Suicide for Freaks, Geeks, and Teens, and Other Outlaws. You know, for the most part, you want to kill off parts of yourself, but you want to create new ones. And so that sense of hurting yourself, if it is against your body, it sometimes is a way of gaining control. And then alternatively, there's a way of losing control. If you feel like you have too much going on in your life, there's like too much, many responsibilities. You have, you know, those people, I sort of noticed, often their self-destructive behaviors make them lose control. Alcoholism, drugs, you know, that type of thing. So there's an alternative. There's that balance. If you feel you have nothing, then you're going to try and gain control over your body or have something. And if you feel like you have too much responsibility, you know, maybe you'll just be like, screw it. I'm just going to let myself out in the world. But it is about control in a lot of ways and asserting control over yourself. So that point of self-destruction, I think, is a very fine and smart point that when doctors talk about it, they completely ignore. They're like, stop cutting yourself. That's bad. Stop starving yourself. That's bad. And I mean, yes and no, but it might be the first time that you've actually asserted yourself. That might be at that point the only thing you own. So why take that away? Of course they're going to lie to the doctors and say, no, I'm not cutting myself. Nicole Blackman, with her piece, because she wrote from the viewpoint of an anorexic, all of these anorexic women thought she was anorexic. She wasn't. And the poem, it's incredible. Basically, it's, let me see if I can start it out, because even the first sentences are fantastic. But the poem talks about the control of self-destruction. Holy, I eat, only sleep and air, and everyone thinks I'm dumb, but I'm smart because I figured it out. I am slimmer than you are, and I am burning my skin off, little by little, until I reach bone and self, until I get to where I'm essential, until I get to where I am. Food doesn't tempt me anymore, because I am so full of energy and sense, I can even pass by water now, because I am living off the parts of me that I don't need anymore. I could feel the slow drips of pain before, swirling inside where my lungs should have been. Now I'm clean inside. I threw out hundreds of things I didn't need anymore, all my dresses and bras, stupid things like jeans and socks. Most days I float through the house naked so I can see myself in the mirrors. I have hundreds of them everywhere, and they talk back to me all the time. They keep me true and pure. They make sure I'm still here. When I knew what I had to do, I took all my notebooks, all my manuscripts, and ate them page by page so I could take my words with me. I can finally control my life and even death, and I will die slowly like steam escaping from a pipe. I mean, it's incredible, this poem. So all of these people, mostly women, were like, she understands, she gets the strength of anorexia, she gets it. They started writing her and being like, my therapist doesn't get it, but you do. He thinks that I'm fine, but I'm going to show you exactly how I cut myself so they can't find it. I'm going to show you all my secrets, because they were so excited. Her poem, inadvertently, this was when the internet was really gathering steam, started being quoted on all the pro-anorexia websites as the patron saint of how to be anorexic. So all of a sudden, all these anorexics and self-destructive women started writing her and being like, you get it. You get the glory of self-destruction. And she was receiving these emails like, oh my God. So her entire essay is sort of about her journey dealing with this onslaught of self-destructive young girls, proud of it, and how for her it was very obvious that they were losing control of their life and trying to gain it through self-destruction, you know? So I forget exactly what point I was making through there, but I mean, it is really tied together. And, you know, the beginning of her essay after that goes, everything comes down to control. The desire to have it, the desire to lose it, the desire to exert it over someone or something. It's a fantastic essay. I really love Nicole Blackman's one. Yeah.
I heard an interview with you where you were talking about destroying parts of yourself to rebuild who you really are. That seems to fit in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a really big point. And I did sort of begin to remember the end of the point I was going to make earlier, which is, you know, therapists and doctors, they're like, stop it. Don't do it. They take away that power. For young girls that are hurting themselves, that might be the first power they feel, you know? So why take that away? You have to take that and be like, this is special. Let's see if we can convert it now to something. And that's the thing, is that for some people, you do need to break down the walls of who you thought you were so you can create something new. And that is another part of self-destruction that people don't understand. I don't want to glorify it in any way, but I do want to talk about it in a way that isn't shameful. And I really think that's what makes people misunderstand it all the time and think that the only way out is hurting yourself so far that it becomes you. You know, there is in some ways a necessity of having those self-destructive periods so you can break everything down and then build anew. And you can't build on old things, you know? If you need to deal with something deep and dark, those self-destructive times are going to happen. Inga Musio actually has a wonderful essay in here where, you know, she was dealing with the grief of the sudden death of her brother. And, you know, car accident, died, and all of a sudden, she, I mean, it just blitzed her. She was like young, 19, 21 when this happened, something like that, in college, and she wrote day after day. She would just write and 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 write. And for me, I was surprised because she said that didn't help. She said, I was writing and writing and writing and that didn't help. I thought immediately, oh, this book's going to be about, oh, I'm hurting. And then I wrote about it and I feel better. That was sort of my clean understanding of it. I also simply wanted to know that other people dealt with this. Inga, though, said I was writing and writing and writing about the grief. It didn't help. What helped is that all of a sudden I discovered cutting myself, you know? And she was like, I was shocked. I was shocked that I could see pain, that I could feel it, that I could watch it heal. And she has this beautiful line. She said, and for a while, my body became a sacred garden of grief, where she would basically cut herself so she could control the pain. She could feel something, then watch herself heal. Again, that sense of control. Like, I can't control all the pain I'm feeling, but I can control this pain. I created it. I saw it. And so she became a cutter and burned herself for a while. And then at one point in her life, she just realized, I'm done with that now, you know, and then just sort of magically stopped as soon as she started. But for her, you know, writing didn't help. That she needed to actually go through that. And she's like, well, I guess I could have like etched 1,000 cranes or tattoos onto my body. You know, she could have tattooed herself. She's like, but that's what worked for me. And I needed that. I mean, Kate Bornstein talks a lot about the importance of self-destruction. She's actually like, do I advocate self-destructive behavior? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yes, I can get out of hand, but any ritual can get out of hand. Kate's is all about, it's called Artist Prayer, and it talks about the ritual of self-destruction and how Kate sort of went through a variety of religions to try and understand her conflicting emotions of wanting to become a woman when she was younger. She was born man, transitioned to female, and then now is Kate Bornstein. Everything is fantastic. And for her, she wanted to go through religions, you know, to understand these feelings. And, you know, ended up in the Church of Scientology for 10 years because the Church of Scientology, it was all about being your body or not your body. It was very much about the body. So, you know, she writes about that pretty beautifully. And then in the Church of Scientology started drawing these pictures, sort of illustrating these sort of tenets of Scientology and realizing more and more what she wanted. But it was that ritual of drawing and, you know, that made her understand, like, sort of accept more and more, like, this is where I'm going with this. Like, look, this is what I drew. This is what I want. And sort of gave her words for things that maybe she wasn't able to say. But yeah, her essay is fantastic, talking about the ritual of self-destruction, the importance of it, and in comparison with the ritual of art. So, yeah, there's just so much in this book. I'm sorry, I'm just rambling.
No, it's great. We're talking with Sabrina Chapp. She is editor of the book Live Through This on Creativity and Self-Destruction. So, Sabrina, is there a connection then between creativity and self-destruction?
You know, it's a hard thing because, yeah, I'll say yes to that. I hesitate because, you know, artists have this sort of prototype understanding stereotype of being crazy and like there's drunk writers and blah, blah, blah. Like there's this image of an artist so much, especially geniuses, right? That we're crazy, you know? I mean, you know, male writers. It's funny. I talk about when I do workshops on this, I'm doing it at the workshop at the Center of Sex, Positive Culture. Basically, I talk about the differences with this type of stuff and these images of self-destructive artists. And I say that if I see like a young male that's dressed all in black at a diner with drinking black coffee and writing in his journal and has a book on him, I know that book is Bukowski. I just know it, you know, and they're all like, I'm going to drink as much as I can and self-destruct as much as I can so I can write like Bukowski. You know, there's this image that you have to be crazy to be an artist. And so I think that understanding of self-destructive artists, that gets fed into in a lot of unproductive ways sometimes. That people feel that they need to be crazy, they need to hurt themselves to have something to write about. Which in itself, it's like, well, if you're crazy enough to think that, then maybe you do, you know? But I think as a whole, you need to, in some ways, consider life, you know? And you don't really need to philosophically consider emotions and really, you know, go through the emotional terrain so much as an architect or as an engineer. That's, you know, this excavating your own mind and emotions. As an artist, that's sort of what you need to do. So that type of stuff comes up quite a bit. So I would say it's more usual that artists deal with these things because they're constantly sort of probing their emotions and having stuff come up. But at the same time, now I might switch my answer, because I was a crazy artist until I saw a documentary with Chuck Close, who is this incredible painter. If you don't know, he's just amazing, and he's just so brilliant, and he paints these incredible, brilliant life. At that point, it was like, you know, his early work was photorealism paintings. And then, you know, he got hit by a car or something and was in a terrible accident and suddenly had to be in a wheelchair and then could only paint, you know, with his like arm propped up. And these are massive paintings. And in the documentary, he was sort of like, yeah, so now I just sort of have to, because I can't really raise my arm anymore, I have to like get the paintings on. You know, I have to have them move for me and stuff. So I paint differently now. But, you know, I was shocked. I was like, this guy went through something so traumatic. He can't walk anymore. He has to prop his own hand up. And he's still doing it. And he's still being brilliant. And I was shocked at how not crazy he was. Because his paintings are genius. And seeing some guy just approach it like a day-to-day thing made me be like, maybe you don't have to be crazy to be an artist. Maybe I could actually be sane. Maybe I can just approach this day by day truthfully and honestly and have it be brilliant. And so he was the first one that made me have hope that I could be sane and create and not, you know, be a terrible artist. So there are people that do that, but I think, I don't know, maybe I'm going back and forth on it. I think artists tend to deal with these things quite a bit more, but I don't think it's necessary. Like, I don't think it's the only thing, but I also do think that you need to have a good sense of yourself to build something. And if you have shame, if you have things in your life that don't allow you to be your true self, sometimes breaking down those things is the only necessary way to begin again, to create your true self. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
A lot of this sounds like it applies to those of us that don't label ourselves as artists.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing, is that right now, a couple things about this collection. So Live Through This, On Creativity and Self-Destruction. I came to it being like, I want to hear women talk about self-destruction. There's two trans essays in here, which is fantastic. And I didn't really touch on male self-destruction, you know, per se. It's also a very American collection. But I think having that sort of focus, because you need to have some sort of focus, allows all of these universal concepts to be understood. It's all about the same thing. Control, shame, power, all of those things. And it's not specifically necessary for artists. You know what I mean? I feel like artists always get to talk about this stuff, but I mean, Let's talk about Wall Street. Like, those guys are crazy, you know, and there's that culture of self-destruction there. You gotta, you know, do so much coke to stay up, blah, blah, blah. It's not glorified in other professions as much. You don't get like, oh, because no one wants to hear, oh, you got the crazy genius doctor or surgeon. No, you don't want to hear that. Everyone else, like, he's a genius with a scalpel. No, you don't want to hear that. Everyone else is supposed to pretend that they're normal, but they're self-destructing just as much because, you know, no matter what, oftentimes there's a pressure to be the finest. And whenever there's pressure, you're going to have a breaking point of some way or another. You know, artists, we get to talk about it more because we talk a lot anyways, and we're not afraid about talking about emotions, and because we actually have to put our emotions on display for everyone, that's why we get this rap of we're the self-destructive crazy people. But I mean, looking at every single other profession, there everyone has the possibility of self-destructing, and in fact everyone does. And that's something that I think I also want to talk about just a bit, is just that, you know, in my introduction, I say, like, everyone, there's a time where, like, everyone smokes too much, everyone drinks too much, you know, you eat too much, you drive sobbing in the rain, you know, these things happen to people. It's not every single day for everyone, but there are periods of life. I will be shocked if there's not one person that hasn't gone through some sort of traumatic thing and found themselves either depressed or doing something that they know they shouldn't. That is always self-destructive in some way. It's when those patterns become spiraled and out of control that it becomes a problem. But for the most part, we're all dealing with taming our own desires in order to move forward in life. And it's everyone deals with these things, but talking about it with this construction of, you know, artists and creativity, I think allows for these things to be talked about in a way that's useful for everyone. And also one thing with the book that I was sort of shocked about, a lot of people that are dealing with these issues, I know they found it really powerful. I didn't expect anyone that wasn't self-destructive to read it. And one of the more powerful responses I got from it was someone that read it after someone very close to them killed themselves. And they said, you know, I'd really been struggling with, you know, this person's suicide, and reading your book made me understand a bit more what they were dealing with. And I think that's a very important thing. People that don't deal with self-destructive behaviors, they're in the dark. They don't know actually what we're dealing with, and they just sort of back away. They're like, oh, okay, and they're scared of it. And I really like this book as a way for people to understand, get an entry to what depression means to people, what it feels like, what people are actually dealing with, because that's the problem, is everyone that is self-destructive, we understand it, but people that aren't, they're sort of scared about talking about it, you know? So, but we need those people to help us not be crazier, to have a reason to come back. So I like having this book as something to hand to people that are like, oh, I'm totally normal, I'm totally sane, why are you so sad? It's like, well, this is sort of what my world's like. You know, and it's a good starting point for anyone that doesn't understand what self-destructive or depressive people are going through as well.
We're talking with Sabrina Chapp. She is editor of the book Live Through This on Creativity and Self-Destruction. And we're just about out of time, but you are going to be doing several more gigs here in the greater Seattle area that people can still catch.
Yes.
And talk about those real quick.
So I'm doing at 1 p.m. I'm doing a workshop at the Center for Sex Positive Culture called Rage to Page. It's a 2-hour workshop where I work with people on sort of converting their self-destructive behaviors into sort of a creative thing and sort of noticing the power of their self-destructive acts. And then, because I'm a crazy performer, musician who will do anything for a gig, you know, I've been playing at the Royal Room and at burlesque shows in town, but on Sunday later on, I'm posing and playing at Dr. Sketchy's on Julia's on Broadway, right? Is that correct?
The one up on Broadway.
Yep. And then on Tuesday, this is going to be a really great lecture at the Center for Sex Positive Culture. I'm doing a multimedia lecture on the book and the themes that I notice in the book while working with the different artists. And that's, I think, 7 or 7:30.
7 p.m.
Yeah, at the Center for Sex Positive Culture. And then I'm continuing down the West Coast to Eugene, Portland, Olympia, San Francisco, L.A., and doing a bunch of events both on the book and then on my new album. So I hope people come.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Again, we've been talking with Sabrina Chapp. She is editor of the book Live Through This on Creativity and Self-Destruction. And you can find out more about her work and her upcoming gigs at her website, sabrinachapp.com.